This is the Nightcap with Tim Murray and Super Bowl champion Sean King on VSiN, the sports betting network.
It is the Nightcap here on VSiN alongside Sean King. I am Tim Murray. We keep getting closer and closer to this. The start of championship weekend. My mind's a little all over the place. It's watching a live feed instead of an actual game when you have a bet going on. That's old school. It's like coming to the book and watching a ticker go across and seeing if your game covered. Ultimately, New Mexico, the Lobos, got us a push. Three shots in the final possession, Sean. All three missed. Couldn't get the back door. Want to look at it on the positive side. Fresno State could have got one of those boards, got fouled. We'll take the push. Sweated it out for 40 minutes, and you make no money.
Yeah, I can't name one player in New Mexico, Fresno State. So.
Jamal Mashburn's son is on New Mexico.
Oh.
Not New Mexico State. New Mexico. The Lobos.
I thought I said Fresno State.
Oh, on Fresno State. Okay. I bet against Rick Pitino, lost tonight by a half point, and bet on his son and pushed. So there you go. That was my night.
Kentucky's tied 64-64.
Oof.
Our producer, Aaron Oster, bet Colorado State minus 8.5. They're up 6 with about 3.5 minutes left.
And I've got Wyoming closing it out here plus 5. They are down 3 against Boise State. They just fouled against Boise State. So we'll see if Wyoming, another sweat in the Mountain West. UCLA. And Arizona about to short moment start momentarily. I took the 3 with the Bruins. Keep myself entertained here tonight. Home team catching some points. I will roll with the Bruins. All right, enough of that. Let's bring in our next guest. He is Kurt Heelan, Pro Basketball Talk, part of the NBC family. I know we shouldn't because the team is 500, but it's the Lakers, and they won. They beat the Nets tonight. Granted, they had no KD, obviously, and Kyrie's still not allowed to play in Brooklyn. AD back, only played 25 minutes. What do you make of this Lakers team? And is there any reason for optimism for this Los Angeles Lakers team moving forward?
Yeah, first thing I just want to say, I hope you didn't rip up your Clippers money line ticket at halftime.
Oh, my gosh. Unbelievable.
35-point comeback is insane. It depends on where you are. You know, you got to remember the Laker fan base is one of those truly large, slightly out of touch with reality at times. When I used to have a Lakers blog, I used to use the line that some Laker fans aren't going to be happy unless they win 2 championships a year. Like, they're just, the standards are incredibly high. And if you're expecting that, well, Anthony Davis is back and they'll get healthy and they can get back in kind of a ring mode. I'm not sure that they're near solving that problem, but I think you saw tonight, like LeBron played. I mean, he's been playing brilliantly anyway, but this was the most active I've seen him on defense. He seemed more comfortable before. You've got Anthony Davis at the 5 they look better with him out there, even though he wasn't 100%. There's still hope that they're a pretty good team, but you watch them and you look at their potential, and then you watch the Suns or you watch the Warriors and think about what they can be when they get, Draymond back and they get right. And I just don't see where or get Milwaukee or somebody out of these. I just don't see them on that level, guys. I mean, do you?
No, I don't. And I mean, I've been a critic, as many others have, of Russell Westbrook in this regard. Like, when he went to the Wizards, Kurt, I was like, this is great. He's entertaining. They're irrelevant. He'll help them get to the playoffs. And he did. He did exactly what you hope for. But if you're trying to win a championship, you can't have him on your team. I just think at this point in his career.
And I think that's a simplification, at least in my opinion, because I don't think their issues are about talent or a fit. I think their issues are about mentality. Like, I think you have a bunch of guys that are extremely wealthy already, extremely accomplished individually, from a statistical production standpoint, and aren't used to playing the game the right way. And this will be interesting because you think when LeBron went to Miami, D-Wade, Chris Bosh, they play the game the right way. like the Shane Battiers.
And they won the title LeBron's first year in Los Angeles.
I know, but the team was different.
No, I understand, but right. the two best players are still there.
I'm kind of getting to my point here. You add Russell, you add Carmelo, you know, you add some of these other guys, they aren't physically at this point in their career
right.
at the top. And they're not used to doing the dirty things, you know, getting, you know, through screens to chase guys around and contest shots and boxing out fundamentally sound so they can get rebounds. And, you know, those are the things that I think are missing from this Lakers team. And I don't think they have a lineup they can put out there that kind of does that consistently.
No, I think you're getting at the heart of it for me, which is when you're talking about, I think Carmelo applies here, but especially Westbrook. Look, when you're in Washington and he's the number one option or Houston, you know what? I can live with some inefficient shooting and some turnovers because his job, the burden of his shot creation for everyone else is so heavy, right? Like he's got such a load to carry for everyone. That is not the case with the Lakers, right? He is, frankly, option three. He should be, you know, when they're healthy. It's LeBron one, Anthony Davis two, then Westbrook. And when you're option three on a contender, you better be efficient. You better be not, you can't be turning the ball over. You have to be, like you said, I don't want to say playing a role because I think that understates what he can do, but he's got to fit in the sense of like, hey, take these spots. If this is what LeBron needs to do, then I need to play off him and be here. I need to make, and I don't think he just, I don't want to say he doesn't have it in his game. I'm just not sure mentally, like you said, I'm just not sure mentally he can get to the place and a bunch of them can get to the place they need to be in terms of defensive effort, in terms of everything consistently to build the good habits the second half of this season that they're going to need in the playoffs.
Talking to Kurt Heelan at Basketball Talk on Twitter. Kurt, switching over to the Eastern Conference, what do we make of it right now? Because if you look at the standings, it's really remarkable, right? At this moment in time, the Miami Heat have a half-game lead over the Bulls for the first spot, for the top spot in the Eastern Conference. They're a game ahead of the Nets, a game ahead of the Bucks, a game and a half ahead of the Cavaliers, and two games ahead of the Sixers. What do you... I know this is a really convoluted question, but what do you make of the Eastern Conference here on January 25th?
Yeah, I can't really use that word on the radio. It starts with cluster. no, I will say this. I still think, look, I think the Bucks are the team who've weathered a lot to get to where they are, right? Like, they haven't had Brook Lopez outside the first game of the season. He might come back. They've had, you know, DiVincenzo has missed a ton of time. And it's forced, especially with Brook Lopez being out, it's not only more Bobby Portis, but now you got to play Giannis Antetokounmpo at the five instead of the four. Like, it's taken more adjustments for them, and they seem to be hitting their stride. Like, I still feel like, and they've still treated the regular season like championship teams tend to treat the regular season, which is, all right, we just got to get through this. let's get through this to the games that matter. So I still like them. I still think the Nets can, you know, we'll see what happens, but let's see what happens when they put everything together. And there's the whole Kyrie issue and all that, but I still think they can be better. I'm just really curious if I think Miami is a threat. Mm-hmm. I think Miami is is it just me? They look better built for the playoffs than the regular season. Like, I like the way they match up in the postseason. I'm curious if Chicago can do it in the postseason. If they're you know, it's going to be a rough few weeks for them right now without Caruso and Ball because they're just going to have to win shootouts. Like, those guys were so central to their defense, and I bet the over on those games for a while.
It's interesting because I still think Milwaukee, to me, is head and shoulders the number one team. You know, I just look at Miami, and I love Miami, and it kind of happened the other night at Atlanta. Like, when the game's on the line late, and in the playoffs, games are tighter. They're closer. Yeah. They come down to the last few possessions. I just don't know that Miami has that go-to guy. As good as Jimmy Butler is, he's never really been the guy to get his own shot at the end of games. You know, what does Miami do at the end of games to make this postseason different than any of the others in the recent past, except the one in the bubble that kind of has an asterisk on it?
Yeah, I think they need Jimmy Butler to be that guy. They're also going to need other guys to knock down shots. I mean, what they do have is shooting everywhere. Tyler Herro and Duncan Robinson. And Heck, Max Strus, who how many of us knew who he was? I think I saw him at Summer League. He's got to be in my notes somewhere. Like, he was one of those guys before the season. And, like, he's just knocking down. Like, they've got guys. And what they have is matchup versatility and scheme versatility that I think makes them a dangerous playoff team. But they are going to need – you're right. If it's the last shot of a game with the Bucks,
they've got three options. You can go to Chris Middleton. You can go to the Greek Freak, and you can go to the point guard.
Yeah, and same obviously with Brooklyn, where you have Durant's option number one, but Harden and Kyrie. Kyrie's hit a shot or two in clutch moments before, guys.
Right? Yeah, a couple times.
I kind of didn't mention the Nets just because I just don't think. Historically, yeah, but when you have one guy that can't play at home and then your best guy's hurt, like, I don't know how that works.
Yeah, the Durant will probably be back, but that whole road home thing, it feels like, you know what it keeps reminding me of, guys, is those, you see it in college where a team will go into a season like, all right, so we got two quarterbacks and I'm going to play one for a couple series and another for a couple.
Right.
And you're like, oh, and how does that always work? It just feels like that. Like, we're going to start Patty Mills at home, but on the road, he's going to come up. It's just how do you deal with adjustments and stuff? I'm not sure how that works all that well. And they are a team much like the Lakers, but that's a team really lacking continuity, not only because their big three haven't been able to play together that much, but it's forced all these other lineup changes and guys have been in and out. And, you know, they just got Claxton back tonight and stuff. Like, there's just no, Joe Harris has missed most of the season. Like, there's just no continuity there, right, at all. And I don't know how they have enough time to build it.
Yeah, we got to run. Kurt, great stuff, Kurt. As always, at Basketball Talk on Twitter. A thrilling finish at Rupp Arena. We'll get you that on the other side.
This is the Nightcap on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hunt down a win with the Football Showdown Series presented by Amazon Prime's Videos Reacher. Play free fantasy football during the playoffs and fight for your share of $20,000 in total cash prizes. Head to DraftKings.com/JackReacher now to get in on the action. Terms and conditions and other eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. You know, as always, we got to give credit where credit's due. Producer Aaron Oster, Colorado State, Rams coming home.
Yep, just had one play.
77-66.
Simple and smart. That's how I like it, Aaron. Keep it coming.
You know, you guys don't realize how frustrating and impossible it is to work with a former NFL starting quarterback. He texted us, what games do you like? I sent him three games. They went 2-0-1, by the way. No big deal.
I think text is plural, too. I don't think you have to put the S on it.
And and then he's giving me grief.
Well, you know, Aaron sent me one game, and it's a lot easier. And
I know we have some loyal followers out there, and you think back to about 7 days ago, the conversation I had with my co-host. So there's context to this.
What did I do yesterday?
No, I said I think you should take a couple days off just to clear your mind, because college basketball is a lot of information. It's a lot. If you really are, like, looking at all the games and coming up with, okay, who's playing, who's not playing, who played last night, who has a big game coming up as opposed, you know what I mean? Look, so many things and then so many games. Like, I told you, I think you're really good at it, but I think you should just really force yourself to pick one game a night.
Well, I'm glad I didn't do that.
And I think you might go like 5-0, 6-0 over the week because I think you're that good. You like my children. So I take my children to, like, the store, and, like, we go in to specifically get them one thing. And that turns into, ooh, can I have this? Can I have that? Can I have this? So that's how you are when it comes to the CBB slate. See, football, I think you're good at, you look at, I don't like that, I don't leave that alone. But it's just something about college basketball. It's just the apple of your eye.
There's a lot of games.
Like, you wake up and you look at that slate of games, and that mind goes to wandering back when you played Division IV basketball and your roommate is the head coach at George Mason State and they're playing Appalachian Upper East and you, yeah.
No idea what you're talking about.
No,
right
but
now.
I'm just saying, like, sometimes you look at the college boards like, who's playing? Where is that school?
You got to go diving, man.
That's what I'm saying.
Got to go diving.
You're a treasure hunter. That's what I'm going to call you.
Well, it was a fruitful night. Hopefully we can get UCLA home tonight. That was more of
I didn't like that play. I wasn't going to talk you guys out of it. But
it wasn't.
Like
it wasn't. Look, it wasn't. It was another one of those keep me entertained during the evening. Yeah. But by the way, we're in overtime right now.
We are.
Kentucky and Mississippi State. Kentucky closed a 9-point favorite. I didn't play the game. I didn't like it. Ty Washington was ruled out. Kentucky coming off of the loss against Auburn. You might think, okay, this would be a bounce back spot, which is possible. But, you know, upcoming this weekend, they're playing Kansas. Washington out. I
hope they lose. I might get an extra point or two in the Kansas game.
Yeah,
and I'm definitely taking Kentucky.
I need Kentucky to lose every game pretty much because Texas stinks, and that's one of our cigar bets.
Oh, I forgot about my cigar.
Yeah, that one you could put a check mark on.
I need
right
Kentucky
now.
To keep winning, and I need them to beat Kansas because I think I have Duke and you have Kansas.
I do. I actually feel pretty good about that one. I think
you shouldn't.
I think Duke's got some issues heading into
the
NCAA
tournament.
Kansas
plays in a really tough conference, so they have multiple losses.
True, but we have another cigar bet. Who's going to go deeper?
Oh, that's Duke.
Into the
yeah.
Because Duke has won how many championships?
Well, we just got to figure out how to hide Jeremy Roach. No, he had another great shooting night tonight, 2-for-8.
Well, I mean, you know, the last time Duke had 3 lottery picks on their team, they did a really good job of, you know, leaving the number one pick away and making sure we keep everyone happy.
Well, nobody talks about this, but Cam Reddish kind of like opted out on us.
Cam Reddish was, yeah, he's not.
Remember that little deal where like he didn't play.
Yeah.
Like if he got mad about something and he sat out in the tournament.
He shot like 30% from 3 that year. Awful.
He didn't. No, he had games where he was really good.
Yeah.
But I'm just telling you, come tournament time, he sat out.
I have days too where I'm handsome and it's, you know, few and far between.
I want to support you, big fella, but
that's what I kind of bounce around the landscape of sports today. Did you see the latest rumor? So initially it was thought that Caleb Williams was going to USC.
Russell Wilson, man.
Then maybe Georgia. Then, okay, back to USC. Then maybe LSU. But then, you know, Miles Brennan's coming back, and thought is that Brian Kelly promised Miles Brennan the job to bring him back. So it's like, okay, USC makes sense. And now the latest rumor is that he might be headed to Wisconsin. And here's why. Bobby Engram is the wide receivers coach for the Baltimore Ravens.
Mm-hmm.
He is expected to be the offensive coordinator for Wisconsin.
Okay.
His son is on Wisconsin's team. He's a defensive back. They are apparently very close, and the Engram family, they went to high school together. They played at Gonzaga High School together in Washington, D.C., Caleb and Engram. So that's the latest rumor that maybe he's going to Wisconsin now. I don't know.
Well, he's Russell Wilson.
I just don't know. Look, Russell Wilson gave Wisconsin some of their greatest years. So maybe that's the way to go. So
I'll be honest, and I hope all these kids hear this. I don't care where they go.
Well,
I mean, I hope they realize that at some point, like, they're going to get somewhere, and it's actually going to be their performance that matters. Like, it's kind of the culture, like, stinks to me, because, like, a kid goes somewhere, competes, doesn't do a good job in the competition, doesn't play great, so then they leave.
Mm-hmm.
Or the kid wins a starting job and doesn't, you know, consistently put a good product out there, so instead of staying and getting better, they leave. And they think going somewhere else is going to change the fact that at the end of the day, they have to perform. So wherever these kids end up, they end up. I just hope they realize that you're still going to have to play good.
I would just say this about Caleb Williams in the futures market. If he goes to Wisconsin, he ain't winning the Heisman Trophy.
Well, here's what's interesting.
If he goes to USC, I think there's a possibility.
He may sacrifice winning the Heisman and ultimately play for a national championship.
That's true. I mean, Wisconsin plays on—
especially if the schedule's kind
of— plays in the Big Ten
West. And they dodge Ohio State. in the crossover games.
Wisconsin started the year, what, 1-3?
Yeah.
And if they didn't lose to Minnesota in the regular season finale, they win the Big Ten West. They go to the Big Ten Championship. Now, do they beat Michigan? I don't know.
They play better than Iowa.
Yeah, play better than Iowa. I mean, they lost to Michigan earlier in the year, but you've got one of the best defensive minds in all of college football, even arguably all of football. I mean, the Green Bay Packers wanted Jim Leonard to be their defensive coordinator, so you know the defensive side of the ball is going to be just fine.
Right.
I mean, I don't know. Paul Chryst, I think the jury's kind of out on him as an offensive mind, but he had success at Pittsburgh, and look, they win a lot.
And that's why he's bringing Ingram, right? So he can implement some of the Lamar Jackson stuff for Caleb Williams?
Well, Ingram was the wide receivers coach. I don't know.
He's sitting in the offensive meetings in Baltimore.
Yeah.
Yeah, they don't make him sit outside.
But that was – I saw that, and it was getting, like, hot on social media. And one of the recruiting analysts for On3, which is the, you know, up-and-coming college football website, predicted that he'd go to Wisconsin. So I don't know.
Yeah, I got a cigar bet for you.
I don't want it.
No.
What is it?
No, this is a cigar bet I want.
I'm not going to take it. Anytime you come up with a crazy concocted cigar bet,
Dylan Gabriel
uh-huh.
has a better season statistically next year than Caleb Williams does.
Well, how?
Because remember when Dylan Gabriel changed from going to, I think it was UCLA.
UCLA to go to Oklahoma.
And I told you, I made a statement. I said, Dylan Gabriel's better than Caleb Williams. And everybody laughed at me.
I don't know how to, because if we're, well,
he's
how do
light
we,
it up.
How do we break it down? Is it completion percentage?
It's across the board. It's across the board. The passing yards, right, touchdowns, interceptions.
We need to work it out. Yeah. Because
but can we put a tentative? We'll work out. Yeah, we have to have at least five categories.
I don't know. If he goes to Wisconsin, I don't know if I necessarily want that bet.
Why? You can easily throw for 35, 40 touchdowns at Wisconsin.
He would throw for a lot more at USC.
Maybe.
Yeah, definitely.
Maybe.
With Lincoln Riley?
I just told you, to me, the jury's still out on Caleb Williams. You think he's a lot better than I do. He's talented.
You came on the show.
I did.
Our Overreaction Tuesday.
That's what I said.
And you said Caleb Williams.
Right after the Texas game. Yep.
I never said he was going to
overreaction.
I said he was going to be top three in the Heisman, which.
Yeah, I think he's talented, but I think he's a long way from being a consistently good quarterback, down in and down out, week in and week out. But he's a young player, so they can.
I think if he goes to USC,
develop and improve a lot
in a weak conference, he's going to light it up.
I don't know. Pac-12 is weak. It's not as strong as
you call it the pudding conference.
I do,
but
that's because like no one really cares about it nationally. They produce a lot of talent. They don't have a lot of great teams.
Not really.
But they, yeah.
If you want to go look up all their draft picks in years past,
but the guys that they do put out are really good.
Yeah, I mean, SEC just puts out, you know, 15 first-round
picks. We're not comparing
them
to the SEC.
Well, you just say, you call them the pudding conference.
I said because no one cares.
And then now you say
right, if pudding's sitting on the table, nobody cares.
I like pudding. It's a nightcap.
This is the Nightcap on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
If you missed any part of our show or anything on the VSiN schedule, don't forget to check out our free sports betting podcast. Catch replays of all our shows or download and listen on your schedule. Go to VSiN.com/podcast. Get Beating the Book with Gil Alexander. Market Insights with Josh Applebaum. We've got Hardwood Handicap, the Lombardi Line. Follow the money. My Guys in the Desert, Coast to Coast Hoops, and many more. They're all free and available now at VSiN.com/podcast or wherever you get your podcast. Look at that. Fans back at Pauley Pavilion. And Tiger Campbell's got 9 points out of the chute. Bruins up on Arizona 24-16. End the game.
Hey.
No more. End the game.
It's amazing how money makes things move, huh?
What's that?
Yeah, California was going to stand on the hill. There'll be no fans at sporting events. And then the NFL said, whoop. Hey, Jerry, you available? 3 weekends from Sunday, and all of a sudden, fans are back at the games in the Los Angeles County area.
Well, it never stopped at SoFi.
Right.
And that did not – Mick Cronin gets upset about a lot of things. He's pretty easily agitated.
Yeah, he turns red, too.
But he was not thrilled, especially when they lost to Oregon without fans. By the way, Oregon in a dogfight right now. Oregon went off as an 8-point favorite, and they are now losing to Colorado. Is that game?
That's got to be at Colorado, right?
No, it's at Oregon.
Oh, that's bad.
I'm thinking that's FS1, maybe? Anyone? Just peek the big board. I don't see it up there.
I've got a Pac-12 network.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
if
a game happens on the Pac-12 network, does anyone really watch it? All right.
The Pudding Channel.
But they have really good talent. You know, it's just...
They do. I mean, they could potentially have, like, 2 number one picks in 3 years. Well, not number one, but what should have been the number one pick. I mean, Justin Herbert should have been in that draft. He wasn't. Kayvon Thibodeau may be the number one in this draft.
Didn't Joe Burrow go one?
Yes.
You would take... If you redrafted, you would take Herbert over Burrow?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah. Just because I think Herbert's more athletic.
Yeah.
They're the same in every other aspect. Herbert has a better arm. Now, what Herbert does not have is a head coach that tries not to sabotage. But if you look at Zach...
He had two of them.
If you look
Anthony
at,
Lynn did his best, too.
Right. If you look at Zach Taylor, I mean, people were firing him after his second year in Cincy.
Oh, for sure.
What, 6-25 or something?
They were getting ready. They were getting ready to hire Ryan Day to come on down, right?
He was out of there. And then, you know, this year happened. So next year could be that year for... What's the Chargers head coach name?
Brandon Staley.
Him. Yeah.
Your favorite?
Yeah.
Your guy?
Let's go for it. We're on our own 26.
You were pretty quiet when the Bills went for it twice on their opening
so
drive.
So here's the deal.
4th-and-2 from midfield went for it. 4th-and-goal from the 1 went for it. Converted
so
both.
Here's to me where the Bills are in a unique situation, and I don't think it's analytics. They actually run their quarterback in the QB run game.
Devin Singletary scored the touchdown.
I know, but it gives you a numbers advantage in the run game, and it changes drastically what the defense has to do to defend that. So because that's such a big part of what they do, Josh Allen is such a huge weapon, I look at that differently. The analytics-based decision that I think what might have been the dumbest of the weekend was Mike Vrabel deciding to go for two instead of taking an extra point and taking the lead in the actual playoff game, 7-6. Like, I didn't understand that one at all.
Well, I thought on the first drive of the game to go for on 4th-and-1 when you have Josh Allen was brilliant because the other guy...
Only because of the QB run game aspect.
No, I just...
It's so hard to defend that.
You're facing... Yeah, but you're also facing Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, but I just think...
And if, by the way, if they didn't get that, you would have crushed it.
No, I wouldn't have. Because this is an
opening drive of the game, midfield.
This is an X's and O's based decision for me because of how hard it is for NFL defenses to defend actual QB run game stuff because they don't see it. Remember how I told you Bill O'Brien, one of the reasons I think Alabama struggles in the red zone because he's a pro guy. He's not into the QB run game stuff, and that's a great way to be productive in the red zone because you have the numbers advantage. You have an extra blocker. So NFL defenses don't see a lot of design QB runs during the course of the season. So they don't spend a lot of time on gap integrity and different things when it comes to, you know, defending the QB run scheme. So
I actually thought Brian Daboll.
That's why it's a huge advantage.
I thought he was a disservice during that game. There were multiple 3rd-and-shorts where he went away from the run game. And
I thought they did a good job of mixing it up.
I think it was the end of the first half. My memory serves me correct. They had an opportunity on 3rd-and-short, and they did not run with Josh Allen and led to a punt. So there were a couple plays where I thought there were.
And sometimes in those situations, you have two plays call. Like you say you're on the right hash, and you're going to run a boundary run, and if they overload that side, you're going to throw a quick screen to the field. And so maybe the numbers weren't right. Like a lot of stuff, you know, if you really want to peel back the layers and look at what's really going on, not just what, you know, people think is going on, like from a strategic standpoint as to why certain things happen in games. But, you know, having Josh Allen and having a developed, worked on QB run game to me makes a lot of difference.
So, Bills gone. By the way, if the Bills win that game, do they win the Super Bowl?
No, I don't think it's that simple.
I'm just asking you. In your opinion, do you think they win the Super Bowl?
No, I don't think it's that simple.
Do the Chiefs win the Super Bowl?
I don't think it's that simple either. I think, if anything, what we've seen this year is that Nothing's a guarantee.
Well, I'm just asking you a question.
No, I'm not trying to be sarcastic. I'm being honest. That's my honest opinion.
Are
the Chiefs the favorite, in my opinion, to win? Yes.
Well, yeah, they are.
Do I think the Chiefs are vulnerable? Yes, because I think they're Patrick Mahomes throwing a sidearm pass when he's rolling to the right. Tremendous. No one can do it but him. If that same pass gets tipped and then intercepted behind him, I don't think the Chiefs are good enough against these elite offenses to hold up. So that's why I'm just not standing on the hill shouting this is Kansas City to lose. I think Kansas City's as average can be on defense. And in the secondary, below average.
Well, and that's why I think it's...
And they're going to need Patrick Mahomes to play... Let me put it like this.
Mm-hmm.
Kansas City can't win a game where Patrick Mahomes is 11 of 17 for 121 yards, no touchdowns, and an interception.
Of course not.
Which is what Jimmy Garoppolo's statistics were when San Francisco went to Green Bay and won last
weekend.
Because
they have a good run game, even though it didn't really
Kansas
show.
Kansas City can't win that kind of game.
No.
So when you ask me, is it theirs to lose, that's why I say they got to play it out. Because they're not a complete football team.
If the Bills had beaten the Chiefs, they would be the favorite to win the Super Bowl. In your opinion, do you think the Bills would have won the Super Bowl?
No.
Who do you think would have beat them? 49ers?
I do.
Yeah. What is it about
the
49ers?
And the only reason I say that is because it's Sean McDermott, Josh Allen's first time through it. This would have been their first time.
That's true.
With a week in between, you know, all the hoopla that goes around playing in that game, and you know, whereas Shanahan and Garoppolo did it a couple years ago. Sean McVay and everybody but Stafford did it a couple years ago.
So here's a question. So if the 49ers, we're going to get to some exactas on the other side, but if the Rams beat the 49ers on Sunday, they go to the Super Bowl. McVay's been there. Von Miller's a Super Bowl MVP, but Matthew Stafford has never been there.
Yeah. He has a huge advantage.
Disadvantage?
Advantage. Because you're playing at home. So if it's going to be your first time doing something and you get to sleep in your own bed.
That's true.
You get to play in your own stadium. I mean, you know all the nooks and crannies. You know where all the lights are. You know, you never have to worry about can I find a play clock. Like, you know, every inch of that stadium by now. That's a huge advantage than to going somewhere, you know, maybe you didn't play. I mean, you haven't been in 3 years. You know, and it's the little things. Like the play clock is at different places in different stadiums. You know, where's the guy that's, you know, counting down for us coming out of commercial? You know, so many things that are different when you go to an away stadium than, you know, when you play at home. And that's a huge advantage for Stafford, if they can get there.
Yeah, if they get there, that's a great point. Because I think people overlooked that facet last year, which was Buccaneers were playing at home. And also they had a defensive line that was going to obliterate the offensive line in front of them.
And it's much easier to take care of your loved ones because it's your city. You know where all the hotels at. You know where you can put them. You've got the number of the car services. Hey, listen, my mom's coming in this day. I need you to make sure you pick her up. She's going to stay at boom, boom, boom. Brother and sister going. You know, it's a lot of that stuff is just easier. It's a lot less stress. You can really focus on actually the game. Now, having a week between to me is a huge advantage. First of all, if you have any injuries, like say 49ers win, Trent Williams gets an extra 7 days to get that ankle 100%. You know, so I think having the week in between is a huge plus. But if Stafford can win, you know, even though it'll be his first time, it's at home.
UCLA leading 27-20 right now over Arizona. 6.5 minutes to go in the first half.
Come on, Wildcats!
Golden State up 90-71 with 2:52 to go in the third half. Period. We'll get to some Super Bowl exactas. Anything intriguing to us? We'll discuss those on the other side. That's the Hater, Sean King. I'm Tim Murray. Peace.
This is the Nightcap on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's never too early to prepare for the big game, and we want to make sure VSiN is part of your plans. We'll be with you throughout the playoffs, and then on championship weekend, we'll have 56 hours of free video coverage on VSiN.com, leading up to our sixth annual live big game betcast. It's the biggest game of the year. Make your plans now to join the VSiN betting experts before, during, and after the action at VSiN.com. Alongside Sean King, I'm Tim Murray. Our guy Eric Eager going to join us. Top of the hour.
Oh, I can't wait.
Can you not waste all his time on you hating analytics?
Well, the good thing is we only have two games to get into, so it's not like that's we have true. To leave a whole lot of the allocation for this weekend's games. There's only two. Oh, I can't wait.
But once again, going for it on fourth down at the 50-yard line is not – is Dave Ross must have been saying, kick, kick, kick. And
I don't have a problem with that because
– because he got it?
No, but because you're only dealing with half the field. So say you punt it and he catches it at the 25.
Well, they did punt it. They had a net. There was a terrible decision in that game to punt where they had a net of like 20 yards.
Right. So, I mean, what do you gain in 20?
And also they're punting to Tyreek Hill, as we talked about yesterday with
again, I'm always going to side with a team that uses QB run game regularly. So that means they practice it. They understand the number counts. They understand the different looks. They understand where they have advantages. You know, to me, that's completely different than a team that doesn't utilize a quarterback in the run game.
Buffalo punted on fourth and one,
mm-hmm.
and they got a net of 27 yards. And what did number 15 do? He scored in five plays.
Yeah. What'd that make the score?
Made it 23-14.
Yeah, I thought I was good at that point. I did. I was like, okay, yeah.
Well, and then –
because I was on the right side of the number.
Andy Reid – and it ended up working out because they got the ball back, but he punted on the Buffalo side of the field.
You know, Peyton Manning used to tell me this all the time.
Who's that?
Peyton, when I was in Indy. He used to always tell me, say, hey, Sean, punting never gets you beat. Taking a sack doesn't get you beat. It's like turning the football over gets you beat.
Yeah, what does Peyton know?
I'm just saying.
What does Peyton know?
Like, you pay the guys on defense as well.
I know. Yeah. Well, ask Josh Allen about that right now.
And there are certain,
he gave him 13 seconds.
Yeah, and you know what's crazy? In all of the Bucs come back, the Bucs went for it on fourth down and didn't get it, and then get a godsend. Cooper Kupp fumbles like the second play of the following offensive drive. They pick it up. They get better field position.
I still can't believe Cam Akers fumbled that ball.
Twice.
I thought.
Twice.
So.
That was a great play by Ndamukong Suh.
It was. He's a.
That's a big, strong dude.
He's. Yes.
Yeah.
I would rather not get hit by him. That would not be enjoyable. Actually, I think pretty much everyone in the NFL hitting me would suck. So
especially those big guys. Those guys are strong.
Yeah, you think?
Yeah. Like if they touch you, like you
I would fall.
Yeah.
And I would be in pain. Probably injured. So Cam Akers.
Mm-hmm.
We were singing his praises 2 weeks ago, coming off the Achilles injury. Just remarkable that he's back. Fumbles twice.
Where's his confidence?
That's what I'm asking. Heading into this game, how much do you trust Cam Akers?
I don't know. We won't know.
They won the game.
Who was the starting running back for the Rams when they who'd they play? The Patriots in the Super Bowl?
Oh, CJ Anderson. Remember CJ Anderson? He was like picked up off the scrap heap.
So we don't know. Akers never been on this stage. We'll find out how quick it can bounce back. You know, the thing about Akers, he's very talented, but he played at Florida State at a time when they weren't Florida State. So, I mean, we'll see. That has to bother with you mentally as a running back. And the hard thing is being who you are and maintaining ball security moving forward. Because now the overreaction for a running back is every time I get it now, okay, I'm going to run with two hands on the ball at all times. But you can't be evasive and elusive and utilize his athletic ability, which is really what makes him elite. You know, and run the ball like that. And trust me, when you put on the film that you will fumble the ball every time he's tackled in this upcoming game, they're going to be trying to pull the ball out mm-hmm. every time. It's a part of life. It's like a boxer that, you know, gets hurt every time he gets hit. And, you know, they're going to go out of their way to try and hit you more.
So we got some Super Bowl exactas to take a look at. Anything appealing? We'll drop these in. So the Chiefs beat the Rams.
Mm-hmm.
That's plus 250. Rams beat the Chiefs. That's plus 350. Chiefs beat the Niners 4-1. 49ers beat the Chiefs plus 650. Rams beat the Bengals 9-1. 49ers beat the Bengals 14-1. Bengals beat the Rams 14-1. And then the longest shot at DraftKings, Bengals over the 49ers 20-1. By the way, UCLA now up 13. Keep it up, Bruins. Anything intrigue you here? I'll be honest. Nothing really jumping at me. I know Aaron, I don't know if he played it. Our producer Aaron was texting us about some look-ahead lines that had the Chiefs as a 3-point favorite or 2.5-point favorite. We'll put those up for you. Rams, 49ers. If it's 49ers Chiefs, it's Chiefs minus 2.5. If it's Rams Chiefs, it's Chiefs minus 1.5, I think, which would surprise some people.
If I look at that and I put context around it, okay, mm-hmm. which of these options is most likely to occur that also has value?
Yeah, for sure.
Then I think it's 49ers beating the Chiefs.
Going back to the exact.
Right, to the exact.
Plus 650.
Yeah, going to the exact. If we can pull that screen back up, that'd be great.
So we obviously had this Super Bowl 2 years ago.
Yeah, that
down in Miami.
Plus 650. To me, that's one that I think can happen, and I would not be shocked. But we get a rematch of a couple years ago.
Yep. And if Jimmy G makes a better pass.
Or if you just run it instead of allowing Jimmy G to lose the game, I can see the Niners beating the Chiefs. I do not think the Chiefs are very good on defense.
I agree.
That's why I think they're vulnerable. Because as elite as Patrick Mahomes is, he's extremely high risk at times. Now, he's talented, and the guys he's throwing to are talented, so they make it work. But if you get unlucky in a couple of those situations, a guy on the D-line doesn't get a pass rush, he jumps up, taps the ball up, they get an interception, or Tyreek Hill or Patrick Kelce fumble. And you know, if something like that happens, because of the liabilities I think Kansas City has on defense, you know, they're not a complete football team. Like, it's not like we're looking at, oh, these guys are great on offense, defense, and special teams. Like, I don't look at Kansas City like that. And that makes them vulnerable. That makes them vulnerable, in my opinion. Because I don't know anything that they do on defense that's elite. They aren't elite at rushing the quarterback. They aren't elite at picking the football off. They aren't elite at defending the run. You know, but because they're so good at offense, situationally, they're kept in really advantageous positions, meaning that they generally have the lead. And the other team is...
Except with 13 seconds to go.
Well, yeah, that was... But they're in that position. Why? Because they're awful on defense.
But... Of the three remaining offenses, are any as good as the Bills, in your opinion?
Yeah.
Cincinnati.
Like, I'm going to say this again, just in case you weren't tuned in earlier. Cincinnati played Kansas City in week 17. Joe Burrow went 30 of 39 for 448 yards and 4 touchdowns with no interceptions. 446 yards, my bad. So
yeah, don't shortchange.
There's no one that's going to be on the Cincinnati sideline that thinks the Bengals can't beat the Chiefs. Now, they have to go do it, but it's not going to be a lack of confidence. And Burrow is licking his chops because he's watching this film, and he sees 21 Hughes fall down on a double move. He sees 38. I don't even know how 38 got a paycheck after the Bills game. I mean, I think it's since Ward. He played at Louisiana Tech. He was terrible. I mean, Burrow and those guys are licking their chops now. Sorensen's not scaring anybody when he's lined up back there at safety.
Matthew should be back. He was tweeting about it today.
They saw the Honey Badger turn the hit down on Josh Allen. That's how he got hurt. That was on the 4th-and-2, I think, from the 50. They did QB run game. Instead of him coming up and fitting the run on Josh Allen, he ducked his head and dived at the grass. And it was the defensive lineman from Kansas City that was chasing Josh that ended up kneeing him, I think, in the head. So when they look at that, they're not afraid of Cincy. I mean, they're not afraid of Kansas City. Now, Cincinnati's defense, on the other hand, they're shivering in their boots. They're like, I don't know how we stop these guys, especially with Jerick McKinnon now being an effective runner in the run game, Clyde Edwards-Helaire more in his natural role, in my opinion, as a third down back.
I think people are underestimating how entertaining this game is going to be.
Oh, I think it's going to be great. I would not be surprised if it rivals the Bills game. Maybe not the last minute and a half.
Right. I mean,
but
that's
the
all
overall
time.
Back and forth of the game. I think Joe Burrow's going to have a heck of a game.
I think people are anticipating a letdown. Look, anything's a letdown from arguably one of the greatest playoff games of all time. But Bengals are legit, man. And I bet against them last week. They found a way to win despite their quarterback getting sacked 9 times. By the way, UCLA is up 11 at the half. Go Bruins. Let's go. Eric Eager up next.